Today on Colchonero Chat, Atletico Madrid saw red in Pamplona on Sunday, and while it wasn't quite a running of the Bulls, it was still a mostly comfortable victory against Osasuna. Highlights and key moments from that one coming up, plus a look ahead to Tuesday's Copa del Rey game against Hijuelo. Stick with us. Hey, this is Colchonero Chat, the podcast of record of IntoTheCalderon.com, a proud member of the SB Nation family of blogs. Jeremy Barron here. My guest on this edition of the program is assistant editor of Into the Calderon, Martin Connolly.
Hey guys, don't want to brag or anything, but I seem to recall Jeremy last week called me a good luck charm, and ever since then, Atletico have sealed the top spot in Champions League group stage and made their way back in the top four, so I think that's two you can work on.
Yeah, you and Thiago, two wins in two.
It's not a coincidence.
No, it's not. Not at all. So we're going to have to get you on all of these. No more time on the bench for you. We can talk about your wages another time, but in the meantime, you're a consistent member of the squad. So, a couple games to discuss today. Atletico's win over Osasuna on Sunday. A few key moments in that game that are worth discussing, as well as a preview of the Copa del Rey game on Tuesday against Hijuelo. The first leg of that game will be in Salamanca. It is Copa del Rey last 32. We'll offer a brief preview of that. We start with a La Liga whip around. 13 match days just about complete. Only one game ongoing. It is Las Palmas and Athletic. That is goalless at last check. We start on Friday. Eibar and Real Betis. A 3-1 win for Eibar. Eibar flying high. They are currently up to, they are now 7th in the table. Just 3 points out of 4th place. Incredible. On Saturday, Malaga with a wild 4-3 win over Deportivo La Coruña. Javi Anteveros got the winner in that game. It was one of the goals of the weekend for the 19-year-old. Also on Saturday, Real Madrid with a 2-1 win over Sporting Gijón to solidify first place. Espanyol with a 3-0 victory over Leganés. Sevilla with a 2-1 win over Valencia in the final game on Saturday. Valencia falling ever further into a relegation battle. They are just 2 points off the drop at this time. On Sunday, Alaves going to El Madrigal and surprisingly beating Villarreal 2-0. Alaves now up to 13th in the table with their 4th win of the campaign. Celta Vigo with a 3-1 win over bottom side Granada at Balaidos. Granada still winless on the season. And finally, the Sunday night game was Real Sociedad and Barcelona, arguably the game of the weekend. It finished 1-1 at Anoeta. Sociedad into the top five. They are now unbeaten in their last five. The top five looks like this. Real Madrid, Barcelona, Sevilla. Real Madrid ahead of Barcelona and Sevilla. 6 points clear of both of those sides. Atletico Madrid in fourth. Real Sociedad and Villarreal fifth and sixth, respectively. So, and again, Las Palmas and Athletic are playing right now. So, a pretty transformational weekend in Spain. Las Palmas have taken the lead over Athletic. That game is now 1-0 to Las Palmas. So, you notice that I didn't mention one result. It was Atletico's result at Osasuna, a 3-0 win for Los Colchoneros as they get back into form in La Liga. Just their second win in their last four league games. Martin, general thoughts from the game before we hit on some specifics.
Yeah, you know, the 3-0 scoreline, so I will kind of tell you that it might have been a comfortable victory for Atletico, but I thought it was anything but, especially in the first half. I think the two quick goals just kind of seen off Osasuna and just didn't allow a team that is struggling with confidence back in the game. But it could have been a different story if Torres actually converted the penalty that Oblak saved. I think Oblak needed that save after conceding 3 against Real last week and just to get a little bit of that confidence back. But yeah, overall I thought could have been, you know, you have to factor in the fact that it was after a European game, which Atletico should be used to by this stage. I think that's their fourth game that they played on the road after playing the Champions League in midweek. So I think you have to factor that into the performance. But I thought, you know, it's 3-0, it's a good result, but it could have been maybe a little bit better. But that could just be being nitpicking.
Yeah, I said mostly comfortable in the introduction. Because it was mostly, not entirely. The first half hour, I thought Atleti were wretched, quite honestly. They were about as bad as they were at any point in the Madrid derby. They conceded the penalty. Jose Jimenez with a really nonsensical shove of Oriol Riera. Luckily, Oblak saved the penalty because Roberto Torres went to Oblak's left, and that is pretty much the only direction Oblak can save penalties in, is going to his left. And Oblak, to be fair, made a great save on it. Made a really, really good save. Read it perfectly, timed it well, slapped the ball away. And Osasuna were taking the play to Atletico for a lot of this first 30, 35 minutes. And they weren't creating a lot of dangerous chances, but they were taking the play to Atleti. And it was just not many outlets, not many areas, or chances, rather, to counter. Atletico's two best chances before the opening goal were both crafted by Antoine Griezmann, both on the counter, both chances that were really badly missed by Kevin Gamero and Angel Correa. So you got the first half hour here at El Cidar, and you're thinking, oh, no, this is going to be another game where they drop points. This will be, what are we thinking after this? What are we thinking if Osasuna do go ahead and win this game? Oh. Everything all right?
Yeah, what up, Major?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might have been your internet. I don't know. But we're still recording, so no worries.
Okay.
What was I saying? I was saying something. I was rambling. Oh, yeah. the first half hour was just really bad, and only two really good chances. Osasuna were taking the play to Atleti. They had more possession, had more dangerous possession. And it wasn't until, oddly enough, a corner that opened the game up. Atleti's first goal from a corner since February 6th of this calendar year, which was last season. Koke swung it in. Diego Godin powered home the header. And that put Atleti ahead 1-0. And that changed the entire complexion of the game.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Martin, can you hear me? Martin? Crap. Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah, the connection seems to keep going, Jeremy, between us.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on here. Hopefully you stay on this time.
It still says like that we connect, like I got full Wi-Fi and everything, and doesn't seem to be anything with Skype.
Yeah,
so I'm not too sure.
It must just be a Wi-Fi thing. So, yeah, just keep an eye on that. I'll likely know when you dip out of Wi-Fi because you'll disappear. But yeah, we'll just keep an eye on that, and we'll just power through this. You still hear me, Martin? Damn it!
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right. Again, we'll just keep an eye on it. If worse comes to worse, you and I can do an email Q&A later.
Yeah. Okay. I
can post that tomorrow. If this drops a couple more times, we'll just abandon this and we'll do an email Q&A.
Yeah, that sounds.
All right. So we'll try this again, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Okay.
So as I was saying. The complexion of the game really changed when Atletico scored its first corner, first goal from a corner since February 6th of this calendar year, which was the 2015-16 La Liga season. Koke swung in the ball really well. Diego Godin powered in the header, and that changed the complexion of the game. You there, Martin?
Yeah, I think Osasuna is the sort of place where you kind of make your own luck. You know, it's one of those tough away games that you don't really look forward to because the crowd is in on you, and you know, it's a bit like a Stoke City in the Premier League, or the sort of play that they used to have there anyways at the Pachani Stadium, just to use it as comparison. So
yeah,
really easy to go. Yeah, just go back to when you make your own luck. You know, that penalty giveaway from Jimenez was I think you said it well in your play ratings on the site the last year when you said it's a Jekyll and Mr. Hyde sort of performance from Jimenez, and that's just what we're so used to. And unfortunately, you can see, even though the talent is there, you just got to improve on that side, especially when you're playing for a manager like Simeone.
Yeah, it just, and I want to talk about Jose Ma a little later because the rumors are back with Man United, and his future is again up in the air, and possibly because of games like this. I'll talk about him in a second, but you're right. This is a place where you have to make your own luck sometimes. It's not at all an easy place to play. The last time Atletico were in Pamplona was a 3-0 loss during the title-winning season. And for the first half hour or so, it looked like the game was trending in that direction again. But Godin's goal changed everything. Just, you know, really it felt like seconds later. Angel Correa played a nice little dinked ball to Gamero, who chested it down. Really clever knockdown with his chest. Sent him on his way, and he finished with power to make it 2-0, and really it was pretty much all she wrote. It was pretty comfortable from there. Yannick Carrasco then got a goal in the final minute after Atletico had not one but two penalty calls ignored for handball. The first one was, I think it was Oyer who cleared it off the line with his palm. I don't know how Mateo Lojoz missed that, but you know, that Spanish refereeing. So the third goal was, I think, pretty deserved, and Carrasco made a really nice play on it. It was an error by Garcia at the back for Osasuna. Took the ball off him, sprinted past him and another marker before slotting home his sixth goal of the season. He's now the third Atleti player with six goals to his name in league this season. He joins Gamero and Griezmann. So three important points overall.
Yeah, I love that actually on the Carrasco goal there, you said you've done well, and I actually love that. You know, there was a time when he could have squared. I think it was Saul that was running with him.
Yeah.
And Saul would have basically had an easy tap in. He only had the keeper to beat. But I love that Carrasco, and again, it shows the sort of directness that he brings to the team. He just went for it by himself, and, you know, it would have looked bad if he missed, and I'm sure Saul wouldn't have been too happy with it. But, you know, he just took the initiative. He won the ball back, and instead of squaring Saul, he just went by himself, and he got the goal that he deserved for his work.
Yeah, it was kind of a puzzling substitution. He was the first man off the bench for Simeone. 25 minutes to go, you figured that Cholo would look towards more defensive subs. He later did, but it was a little surprising to see Carrasco come on as the first substitute. But in another instance of Cholo knows, Carrasco ended up getting the goal that salted the game away and gave the scoreline a nice sheen about it. So Carrasco came on for Correa with about 25 minutes to go. I thought Correa was pretty good. Missed a really good chance in the first half, as he tends to do away from the Calderon. He missed a really good chance, but overall he was all right. Set up Gamero's goal. Gamero then went off for Saul, and Saul got about 20 minutes in anticipation of a start on Tuesday, which we'll talk about when we preview that game. Tomas, we had a little bit of party time towards the end of the game as Tomas Partey came on for Antoine Griezmann. As Cholo really then did lock the game away, really did lock things up. Again, Atleti started Gavi and Thiago in the middle. And that's two starts for Thiago, two clean sheets. I'm not sure we can overstate how important Thiago is to this team still. After last season when he got hurt and Saul came in and was so great, I think a lot of people said that, a lot of people thought for sure, that was the end for Thiago, that Saul was going to take over and Atleti were going to roll with him. Not the case. Thiago has reasserted himself in the team.
Yeah, I think Thiago, over the years, and I think it might just be a small sample size with his two appearances so far this year, but I think he's just the definition of consistency, isn't he?
Really is.
Just, I think he's what we sort of need Saul to be and what Saul might not be ready to be, as he aims to maybe do a little bit too much to impress Simeone. But he does them so well. that and a manager in perfection is likely going to notice it. Whereas you get it with Saúl, you know, he has his moments, but overall, right now, I don't think there's any argument for Saúl to be on the bench and Thiago to be starting.
Not certainly not right now, especially after these last two games in which Atleti were, for the entire PSV game, they were barely troubled. This one was a little rougher, especially at the start, but after Gamero's goal, it really wasn't much of a contest. It's both impressive and disconcerting, I think, that Atleti's two most important midfielders, arguably two most important midfielders, are a combined 68 years of age. It's a little disconcerting that Thiago, honestly it is, that he's still so important to this team, as is Gabby, but I think it's a good thing as well, because Koke's so-called permanent move to the center hasn't fully paid off yet. He started out and he played mostly on the left wing on Sunday, but also drifted a little more towards the middle of an attack, which was something I talked about on the last Colchonero chat. Just an overall excellent performance for Koke, despite playing most of it on the wing. But still, it's getting results. Gabby and Thiago, that engine room that won the title, that participated in the 2014 Champions League final, won Europa League. This engine room, it's still working. It's still getting the results. We don't know for how long. But for now, it seems Simeone is content to go back to the more vintage style, the more classic Atleti, the Cholismo style, and put Atletico 2.0 on the back burner, which is fine. It's tried, it's true, it's proven to get Atletico results. And Simeone said last season, when he was asked about this evolution, that, listen, Atletico's history is as a counter-attacking club. We're not going to go against that. We can never go entirely against that. And I think, again, that is something that the team is right now not necessarily struggling with, but it's something that has to be balanced.
Yeah, and that's a fair point you made, actually, about the age of the centre midfielders being a bit of a concern. You know, Jack and Gabby, the fact that they're actually in their head of players like Saúl, who, you know, you'd kind of look to them to add that more youthful energy. It's a little bit disappointing, but hopefully by the time Thiago and Gabby, you know, age maybe in the next year or two and can't actually give the 90 minutes that Simeone will be asking for them, or whoever the manager is by that time, I mean, that's a whole different conversation, isn't it? But hopefully by then Saúl and maybe even Thomas Partey will be able to come on and add more than they're adding right now, especially this season. You know, we got a glimpse of what Saúl can be last season. I think we were teased a bit much because, you know, obviously the expectation is very high coming into the summer, and how he's performed so far isn't what we not only expected but kind of needed. But I think it says a lot for Thiago at that age to be able to win back his starting place. I think you need to give credit to him, and it speaks of the true talent that he actually has.
Definitely, and still does. He's aging like fine wine. We've also seen a glimpse of what Tomas can do. When he got a bit of a run in the team around this time last year, we saw what he is capable of doing. He could be a very good player given the appropriate run in the team. And it's like I said, it's both a good and bad thing that Gabby and Thiago is still the preferred central midfield pairing. It's a good thing in that Thiago is still a really good player and Gabby is still a really good player. But it's also a bit of, you know, when are Atletico going to develop some younger players who can play in the center of the park? Koke is getting there, but he's apparently still not fully there. Tomas doesn't get a whole lot of time. Augusto is hurt. And other than that, there are wide players in the team. Nico Gaitán is a wide player. So Yannick Carrasco is a wide player and always plays more of a forward role anyway. So that's something to look at in terms of maybe transfer business. Maybe next summer, Atleti will look to... I mean, Dani Ceballos from Real Betis has been linked. So maybe they're thinking the same thing I'm thinking.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it sounds silly to say because they're such two talented players, but I don't know about you, Jeremy, but right now, like, a centre midfield pairing of Saúl and Koke would scare me. You know, it's not something I'd actually want to see.
Right now it would, yeah. And last year it was all the rage. Now it would be like, no, that's not my preferred pairing. Go away. But not at all be the preferred pairing.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's a testament as well to Gabby and Thiago that they're able to, you know, make us look at two talented young players like Saúl and Koke and say, you know, what we want is that solidness that Gabby and Thiago provide. So maybe it's just that Gabby and Thiago, they just have that connection and they're linking up and they're just that good that we don't really notice it, because I mean, that's a centre midfield pair, and that for the last few years was definitely underrated around Europe.
Like, they played next to each other for so long, and they've been in the team together for so long that they have great chemistry. Gabby in particular looks reinvigorated. He led the team in touches yesterday. I thought he played great since Thiago rejoined him in the middle of the park. So right now it's working. I don't think that there should be a lot of complaints about it. The complaining will start when it doesn't work. Who knows when that will be. On Tuesday there's going to be, I would expect, almost the entire starting 11 to be rotated on Tuesday. So we'll see it next against Espanyol at the weekend. That game is going to be in Madrid. Let's talk about Jose Ma for a minute. This, again, another Jekyll and Hyde performance in the same game. His first half an hour, I thought, was just... he was all over the place, conceded one penalty, nearly conceded another. And he could have gotten himself sent off for a really nasty challenge on Alex Berenguer. He only got a yellow card for it, but he really was a bit lucky, I thought, to avoid a sending off. And then the final hour or so, he was really good. He was fantastic, the final hour or so. So what did you make of his game?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the first half an hour was like, you know, if you're trying to show someone what you don't do when you're trying to win your place back in the team that you lost a couple of months ago, well, Jimenez basically done everything there that you'd actually tell people not to do in the first half an hour. I mean, the savage penalty that he gave away last week against Ronaldo was clumsy, and it could have been avoided. But at least then, you know, the ball was there. Savage is trying to stretch his leg to win it, and he just leaves it hanging, and Ronaldo obviously sees the opportunity. But the penalty that Jimenez gives away is just ridiculous. I mean, he doesn't gain anything from it.
He misread the ball anyway. He misread the cross terribly, yeah, and he shoved Oriol Riera down. The ball wasn't even near him. It was nonsensical.
That's what I mean. You know, as bad as a savage penalty, you kind of see how it happens in a game of football, you know, especially as a centre-back when you're caught up by pace and stuff. But for Jimenez, it's just, like you said, first of all, he's misread the cross completely. And then he just, there's not been a lot of talk about it because obviously Osasuna missed the penalty and Atletico go on to win 3-0 and everyone's happy, but you can be sure that Cholo is looking at that and thinking, you know, this guy wants to win a starting place and he's just not doing a lot to prove it. In the last hour, like you said, he did play well enough and he was composed, but I think it's kind of hard for someone to forget that first half an hour, and he's still going to have to impress a lot as Savage is on the bench. Because, I mean, you look at Lucas's performance, you'd rather Lucas there right now.
Yeah, Lucas was very good yesterday. He played left back as Felipe is injured right now. Showed a little more attacking intent than he usually does, and still cleaned up at the back. So he could partner Jose Ma in the center on Tuesday. But it still goes that the point can still be made that he's such an inconsistent player. He's clearly very talented, but he also clearly has a lot of maturing to do, has a lot to learn still, and who knows if that's going to happen at Atletico. The rumors have again ratcheted up that Man United want him, Man United are willing to pay for him. If an offer is submitted of 40, 50, 60 million euros, his buyout clause is 65 million. All right. If you see an offer of 45, 50 million, do you let him go? Even with the transfer ban on, do you let him go?
I mean, that's tough because, you know, it's going to get to the point where if he's not playing, because he is talented, I mean, we all know he's talented, he's just got to show it more often than not, and that's the problem, his consistency again with Saúl, but to a worst case, it's Jimenez. But, I mean, that's a tough question, Jeremy, but to be honest, I don't think I would. I think I'd be sure that Simeone has him in his plans, first of all, because he don't want to reject that kind of money. But like you said, the transfer ban is there, and Atletico will be short on options as it is, you know, in case someone goes down with an injury. So I think you need him in his there, and as much as he disappoints from time to time, I think the talent is still there, the potential is still there. And most of all, he provides that depth that Atletico are going to need during the ban.
Yeah, Atletico would not let him go this coming January. That would be ludicrous to let him go. Any move would be done during the summer. And the transfer ban ends in January of 2018. So
would you take the offer?
I think I would. Because if you sell him, you're going to be on for about 4 months with Godin, Savic, and Lucas as your center backs. If you can get through 4 months with those three guys, which you should be able to do, they tend to stay pretty fit, pretty healthy, then you can sign someone over the summer as a fourth choice center back. Matteo Masaccio was linked over the summer. He had a move to Milan that fell through. He could be available again from Villarreal. So you can sign another center back who will, you know, and besides, you're getting 50 million or more for Josema. If that is what United are desperate enough to pay for him, you're going to get a lot of money for him. And if he wants more first team time, then he's going to get it at a side like United with the defensive issues they have. Atletico, I think, could survive without him. But you only sell him if that big an offer comes in. If it doesn't come in, then forget it. He can stay until the ban is over. Then you move him on. But if an offer like that comes in, then I would do it, I think. It would be tough because I like him a lot. But parting with him, it would be such sweet sorrow, but I would do it.
Would a part of that be, Jim, because you think that now is as good enough as he's going to get until maybe in a couple of years when people see that his potential might not be what they expected it to be?
Partially. I think he can become, in 2 or 3 years, I still think he can become, you know, a top drawer center back. But it's just not happening right now. He is not the preferred option. Savage has been preferred to him for the majority of this calendar year. And I just think you can survive without him. And the financial outlay from selling him, it would be substantial. That's money that can go towards paying off the debt. That's money that can be reinvested in his replacement, someone who's a little older, someone who has been around the Spanish league, like Musacchio. So I would do it if that offer comes in. And I like Josema. It's tough, but I would do it.
Do you think many Atletico fans would share that same view?
I think it's more evenly split than a lot of people are on one side or the other. I think it's pretty split because it's clear that he's talented, but he also puts in so many frustrating performances and has so many difficult moments that Oblak and others have to bail him out on. The last three penalties he's conceded, Oblak has saved, which is pretty fascinating. Yeah. He owes Oblak about 6 steak dinners for saving those penalties.
Christmas is coming up, so.
Yeah, he owes him quite a few presents for Christmas for the 3 penalties he has saved from him this year. He saved Thomas Müller in the Champions League. I don't remember who took it for PSV in the group stage. Was it Narsing? I can't remember.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Martin, you there? Martin? Hello? Martin? Crap.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after the beep.
God damn it. Can you hear me? Martin? Martin? Fucking shit. Still doing my podcast.
Doesn't really sound like it.
It's not really going right now.
No.
The person whom you're trying to reach is...
Right. Oh. I'll keep plugging away, but in the meantime...
Best of luck.
Thank you for your hospitality.
See you when? A couple days?
Funny. It'll be next Monday.
Are you done with school?
On Friday, I'll be done. Yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Alrighty. Bye. Oh. All right, ciao.
Okay,
good
luck.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Yeah, I'll need it.
There you go.
I'm ready for my podcast.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after the beep.
This is fun. Whee. Alright, when are you gonna leave?
No, you're not going outside. I won't be able to get you inside. You're not going outside. You just want to go outside with your mom. Come on, let's go. Come on.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after...
Howdy, am I gonna do something?
I don't even fucking know what it works.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah.
Great.
Hello?
All right. You can still hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
I thought the door shut me because we actually had like a good 20 minutes there.
Yeah, you have no idea how much editing I'm going to have to do here. Martin? Martin, can you hear me? There he goes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully you can hear me for another, 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Okay. Where the hell were we?
I think him and his.
Yeah, we were talking. We were talking about him. I don't remember what though. I was mentioning how I would sell him.
Yeah, I asked if you think the most like many electrical fans would agree with you.
All right. Let's pick up there.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's kind of evenly divided. I think everyone sees the talent he has, but I also think everyone sees how maddeningly inconsistent he is from game to game, and that's the reason Simeone can't fully trust him and start him with confidence week in, week out, like he can with Godin, like he usually can with Stefan Savic. But it's difficult to say just how, I think a lot of people do see the financial advantages to selling him when his stock is high. His stock is high for a lot of teams who don't, particularly like Man United, who need defensive reinforcements. So if, God forbid he gets hurt or suffers a truly wretched run of form. But I just think that everyone sees both the talent and the inconsistencies contained in that talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because if you asked the same question last year, then everyone just outright says no.
Because he was starting for a lot of last year, right?
Yeah, and he was actually playing well enough until he got dropped. And, you know, I think it's just a flat-out no. And even though I'm saying no now, I really had to think about it. And if the offer did come in and Atletico accepted it, I'd actually understand the reasons why and I'd understand why you'd sell him. And I remember in the summer when it seemed like every big club in Europe was looking around for a centre-back, especially in England anyway. I know Chelsea, Arsenal and United were all linked at some stage with him as more or less with a big name centre back, and you kind of just then you're worried that they look over and let go sites and actually put in a good offer. But now it's, you know, you're not that phased as you were in the summer. You're not that afraid to lose him, and I think it speaks volumes as to how severely disappointing he's been.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd say, you know, severely disappointing, but he just has not taken that step that he was expected to take. He was, when Atleti sold Miranda, it was to give Jimenez the reins and say, okay, you're going to be next to Diego Godin, you're going to be our center back pairing for the next 5 years. It didn't even make it through 1 year because of his inconsistencies. But he's a young player that's going to happen, but the degree to which those inconsistencies have been happening. And he gets better as the game goes along, but there's only so long you can afford to have that process be, you know, be what it is. So it's tough to say, but if a good offer comes in, I think the club will mull it, and they will mull it over, and they'll make a decision. But almost all the big clubs in England have been linked with him. Man City were linked with him over the summer. United have been linked with him for the past year. Chelsea, I'm not sure Chelsea were linked with him, but Chelsea were looking for a center back, and they were on the prowl. So it's a difficult situation for Jose Ma, who will be starting again on Tuesday, as we'll discuss after this. Copa del Rey action on Tuesday. Hooray. It's the last 32, which is one of the more boring rounds of the Copa del Rey, of a competition that certainly has lost its luster the past several years. But, you know, it's still a trophy. The semifinals, the final, usually pretty good events. The last one was held at the Calderon, and it was the Barcelona-Sevilla extra time thriller. That was actually a really good game. So, don't know where the final is going to be this year. They usually don't announce that till early in 2017 because this is Spain we're dealing with. But Atleti will be playing at Hijuelo, the Segunda B side. They will be playing them on Tuesday in Salamanca. Hijuelo currently sitting 15th in the table with just 3 wins from 16 games. Not great. They haven't won any of their last 5. So you would think that this would be a really good opportunity for a stress-free win for Atleti, who will be rotating the side, as Simeone has done in previous round 32 games. Who do you think comes in, Martin?
I think it'd be easy if you asked me who stays in.
Who stays in then? That's a better question. Who stays in?
It's just really hard to say, especially because after low league opposition that Atletico were going up against, and I'd imagine the team that starts this week would be starting in the return leg as well. Obviously, you know, the big names like Griezmann and Gamero, it would be interesting actually if Gamero starts and we start the last 2 games, but just to get him a bit of confidence. I think that's maybe something to watch out for. I think Torres obviously starts, back 5 just changes completely. I think it'd be interesting if Lucas moves into his more natural centre back position just so Simeone can get a bit of a feel, since he played him left back yesterday. Obviously the whole midfield, Saúl will come in, Gaitán. It's actually going to look like a pretty strong side, and over the 2 legs, I think very disappointed it wasn't straightforward enough.
Yeah, I think Moya certainly comes in for Jan Oblak, or Andres Moreira will come in. I'm pretty sure it'll be Moya though. Jimenez and Lucas in the middle. Versalco will almost certainly start. It would be shocking if he didn't. Which means probably Juan Fran is going to come in or will stay in the 11, as Felipe will likely not play as he continues to nurse his injured hamstring. So you're looking at a back 5 of Moya, Jimenez and Lucas in the middle, with Versalco and Juan Fran as the fullbacks. The midfield is where it gets kind of interesting. I think. Saul and Tomas, I think, will be the central midfield pairing. Mm-hmm. Or Tomas will be on the right. It just makes sense. Tomas has not started yet this season. Saul needs to get 90 minutes in against an opposition that he can showcase his talents against. Earlier this season, you would have thought this would be a game for Augusto or Thiago. Augusto's hurt. Thiago is starting regularly now, so it's more likely that we see Gaitán come in, as he has not played the last three games. He needs to get 90 minutes in as well. So Gaitán will be on one wing. Possibly Koke starts or play some role.
I think
Koke or Carrasco will play some role in this game. Or no, Cherchi. It's going to be Cherchi.
Church. Well, it is time for miracles, isn't it?
It's Cherchi time. Take him to Cherchi.
That's what we've all waited for.
all kidding aside.
Well, you never know, really, because, I mean, you're not going to want to risk, you know, any injuries to key players, especially coming up to Christmas. So
don't try to convince me. Martin, don't do it. Don't try to convince me. I will get excited.
Don't get your hopes up.
God. Oh, goodness. The Italian Stallion. Mr. Pasta himself.
I actually think Koya is going to start, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't think Cherchi will. Sadly.
Correa played well enough on Sunday. Yeah, it's very sad. It's tragic, almost. Correa played well enough to... I'd say to get another start here. It is a Copa game, and you can always put on the bench next weekend. So
I think Correa just needs some confidence, to be honest. Yeah. You know, even just get a couple of goals when he starts. I think that's what we kind of need from. If we can't just get that, and maybe a Cherchi appearance from these two legs, then I'll be happy.
Then up top, you're looking at if Torres's hip is better, and that's why he hasn't played the last two games. He had a hip injury, so if he is good to go on Tuesday, then he will start up top along with. Or Correa could start next to him or play on the right side of midfield. It depends if Cholo wants to start Gamero. Griezmann will almost certainly be on the bench, as will Koke, just in case things go wrong in Salamanca, which would be a shock, a true shock, and raise a lot of concerns, but we don't expect anything to go wrong there. So I think my starting 11, that was a long walk, but my starting 11 would be Moya, Jimenez, Lucas in the middle with Versalco and Juanfran on the left and right side of defense, respectively. Your midfield is going to look like Saul and Tomas in the middle with Gaitán and, I'm going to say, Carrasco on the wings, and Correa and Torres up top. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, I think that's, again, I just would not be surprised if Cherchi actually does start, but I think more or less
I want to see it nailed down. You know, I want to see it.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, because you're going to have to join a starter then. I don't think Simeone's going to do that with the amount of games that have been coming up.
If he doesn't start. There could be potentially a scenario where you need to showcase him for some Italian side who wants to take him on in January.
Yeah,
I think it was Bologna who wanted to take him over the summer, but then he failed a medical because, of course, he did.
Okay. I'm actually really interested to see how Saúl and Tomas do in the center midfield. I think that's going to be interesting to watch out for.
Yeah, they're two Cantoneros. They haven't played together in a while in the middle of the park, but this is the game to do it in. It's around a 32. Should be a pretty easy win against a team that is in the bottom half of the table in Segunda B. If you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? So it's going to be a little bit of touch and go, some experimentation on Tuesday. That said, should be a pretty easy win for Atleti. It really should be. And then the second leg will be at the Calderon on December 21. After that, Atleti will then be jetting off to Saudi Arabia for their Christmas break friendly, which, it's a cash grab, but it'll be interesting. So, yeah, that's what's going to go down on Tuesday. And then after that, Atleti will host Espanyol on Saturday. That will do it for us on this edition of Colchonero Chat. Remember to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at JBBaron at _MC1905. And thank you for listening. We will catch you next time. Adios. Okay, we're finally done.
That was not easy.